Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today, we hear stories from Jill Robbins and Pete Musto. We close the show with An American Story, Part 2 of The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky by Stephen Crane. But first, many people around the world now wear masks, covers for their nose and mouth, when they go out in public. You see masks on people walking their dogs, buying food, riding bicycles, and working at their jobs. In many places, the masks are required by law as a measure to prevent the spread of COVID-19. But commercial masks are in short supply. Most people agree that those rare objects should go to healthcare professionals and others on the so-called front lines of the fight against coronavirus. So, mask making has gotten more personal for the rest of us and more creative in design as a result. It seems masks are becoming the fashion statement of 2020. The online news media site Insider recently published photos of 17 of the most creative masks it found around the world. Many of the mask makers are artists, but not all. The photos include a knitted piece of pink and red from Iceland-based cloth artist Ík Ari. It is a large mask made to look like a big mouth with a long pink tongue hanging out. The report also shows a smart design from leather worker Anissa Mekhabesh of France. She created a mask with see-through material over the mouth. It permits people who read lips because they cannot hear to continue to communicate. Some of the masks among the photos are beautiful. Some artists made masks covered in shiny, colorful jewels or mirror-like material. Another uses paint to create bright pictures on paper masks. A few of the masks are made of plastic and other waste material found on the street. One clothing designer even made a special mask to go with wedding clothes. We might be covering our faces and mouths for a while, and not just for COVID-19. There are lots of other possible viruses ahead, and there is air pollution and toxic dust, allergies, and bad smells. So, are masks our fashion-forward look? Fashion Bible Vogue seems to think it might be. On May 5th, it published 92 cloth masks to shop now. Writer Sarah Spelling notes that masks cover a large part of the face. So, she writes, it is not surprising people are looking for masks that look good. And the story directs readers how and where to buy them. And in Lithuania this week, Reuters reported on a special fashion show held in the capital, Vilnius. There were no live models or crowds around a runway. Instead, the city celebrated creative face covers in photographs on 21 huge signs around town. The billboards show men, women, and children wearing masks as part of a so-called Mask Fashion Week. Those shown in the photos include local artists, musicians, and other townspeople chosen at random. Even the mayor of the city is captured on a Mask Fashion Week sign. Members of a local Facebook group called Mask Your Fashion chose the masks for the signs. Designer Yulia Yanis established the group to share new designs for masks and advice on how to make them at home. A mask is a good way to display your creativity, to express yourself, and it's a good activity to do when you're sitting at home with the kids, said Yanis. Masks can also be used or not used to make political or cultural statements. President Trump does not wear one so far. He has said he does not think a mask would send the right message when he meets with world leaders. He also suggested his wearing one might cause unease among the American public. But some people have criticized his lack of mask use in public. They argue the decision belittles the seriousness of the pandemic. And last month, Trump's Vice President Mike Pence was denounced by many for not wearing a mask when he visited with a COVID-19 patient at the Mayo Clinic, a famous medical center in the American state of Minnesota. Pence later said he should have worn a mask at Mayo, and he put on a mask 2 days after for a visit to an American automobile factory.
Welcome to summer in the great indoors. Parents across the United States are learning children's summer camps will be canceled, delayed, or moved online because of the coronavirus health crisis. Public safety measures will affect how boys and girls spend their summer vacation. From New Hampshire to California, families and the camps themselves are struggling. Online campfires and virtual fun and games in the living room are becoming more likely. It is a sharp blow for children and their parents who have spent weeks at home during school closures. Many had hoped attending summer camp would be a prize following weeks of homeschooling and social distancing. The move is also a sharp blow to nonprofit groups that depend on the money they earn from camps. Young people who were looking forward to working at summer camp jobs have also been affected. When we finally found out that schools were going to be closed for the rest of the year, I was like, well, there's always summer camp. I was really holding out for that, said Rasha Hababi of California. She had planned to send her 10-year-old daughter to her first sleepaway camp. But that is not possible anymore. Hababi and her husband have demanding jobs. But they chose to keep their children away from her parents to avoid possibly spreading the virus. Now, she said, the couple may be forced to ask her parents to watch the children during work hours. An estimated 20 million American children attend one or more summer camps each year. Their camp fees fuel an $18 billion industry that employs over 1 million seasonal workers. That information comes from the American Camp Association, which represents more than 3,100 camps. The association has asked independent health experts to make suggestions for camps. Many camps still hope to open, said Tom Rosenberg, the group's president. Camps are awaiting guidance from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as state and local health officials, he added. Most camps are not asking if they're going to open, but how they're going to open, Rosenberg said. Camp Walt Whitman offers a 7-week overnight camp in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Camp officials sent parents a letter with 3 proposals: canceling all activities, postponing them, or going forward with social distancing and other safety measures. Other camps are racing to move online. Interlaken Arts Camp usually has 2,800 young people from 50 countries attend its summer program in Michigan. But this year, the camp will move to virtual programs. The camp will be shorter than usual, President Trey DeVay said. The changes are proving difficult for many Americans, including young people. Delia Graham was looking forward to spending 6 weeks at Willowbrook Arts Camp, where she has been going since age 5. Now 10 years later, she is old enough to work as a half-day counselor at the camp near Portland, Oregon. Graham and her 5 camp friends have talked in a FaceTime group meeting about what might happen before getting the bad news, she said. I didn't think it would get so bad, that it would last this long, she said of the coronavirus pandemic. I really miss my friends. I'm Pete Musto.
This week, we received the same question from 2 VOA fans. Here is the first question. What is the difference between pandemic and epidemic? They appear a lot in recent VOA news. Thanks a lot. Tina, China. A day later, we got this email. In recent discussion of the outbreak and spread of coronavirus, we got a little bit confused by 2 similar words, pandemic and epidemic. Could you please explain their difference and usage? Thank you so much for your kind help in advance. Chris, China. Dear Tina and Chris, thank you for writing to us. That is true. We are seeing and hearing these words very often in the news. When the coronavirus crisis began, it was called an epidemic or an outbreak. After it spread across the world, the World Health Organization decided to call it a pandemic on March 11th. Here are some examples from news stories about epidemics and pandemics. Italy's coronavirus epidemic began in January. The cholera pandemic began in India and spread across the globe through trade routes. One summer, refugees leaving a yellow fever epidemic in the Caribbean islands sailed into Philadelphia. I like to look at the origins of words when I am trying to understand them better, so I can explain them to you. I found that both of these words were adjectives in English before we started using them as nouns. That is why they end in IC, like the word tragic. The same thing is true of the words comic and academic. They are used as both nouns and adjectives. Here is a sentence where epidemic is used as an adjective. The Centers for Disease Control confirmed that the flu has now reached epidemic proportions across the U.S. When we use it as an adjective, epidemic is often followed by the word proportions. Together, this means the size of the group of people affected is very large. These days, you might hear people use epidemic to talk about a non-medical problem, such as, there was an epidemic of crime in the city. Or, health officials warn about the epidemic use of flavored tobacco. Merriam-Webster Dictionary tells us that our word pandemic comes from two Greek word parts, pan, for all, or every, and demos, for people. Medical writers use this word to talk about an illness that affects almost everyone in a country, or that crosses borders to affect people in many countries. On March 11, 2020, WHO's Director General said, "Pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly. To use these terms, the main thing you should remember is that a pandemic is much worse than an epidemic. A pandemic is a type of epidemic, but you cannot say that an epidemic is a type of pandemic. And people rarely use pandemic to talk about a non-medical problem, as we mentioned earlier with epidemic." Here are a couple of sentences for you to listen to with epidemic or pandemic. Fill in the blank. With fewer people in the streets because of the blank, more wild animals are walking in cities around the world. If you answered pandemic, you are right, because the word describes the worldwide spread of disease, which has affected people and animals. Now try completing this news headline. The blank of kindness. Free toilet paper, car washes, and more. You're right if you guessed epidemic, because it is used to describe something that affects a lot of people, but is not necessarily a disease. In fact, it's something good. Many groups are talking about this epidemic of kindness as they find ways to help each other during this pandemic. Send us your questions by email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is American Stories. Our story is called "The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky." It was written by Stephen Crane. Today, we will hear the second and final part of the story.
"Don't know whether there'll be a fight or not," answered one man firmly. "But there'll be some shooting, some good shooting."
The young man who had warned them waved his hand.
"Oh, there'll be a fight fast enough if anyone wants it. Anybody can get in a fight out there in the street. There's a fight just waiting."
The salesman seemed to be realizing the possibility of personal danger.
"What did you say his name was?"
he asked.
"Scratchy Wilson,"
voices answered together.
"And will he kill anybody? What are you going to do? Does this happen often? Can he break in that door?"
"No, he can't break in that door," replied the saloonkeeper. "He's tried it 3 times. But when he comes, you better lie down on the floor, stranger. He's sure to shoot at the door, and a bullet may come through." After that, the salesman watched the door steadily. The time had not yet come for him to drop to the floor, but he carefully moved near the wall.
"Will he kill anybody?"
he asked again. The men laughed without humor at the question.
"He's here to shoot, and he's here for trouble. I don't see any good in experimenting with him."
"But what do you do in a situation like this? What can you do?"
a man answered.
"Well, he and Jack Potter..."
"But..." the other men interrupted together.
"Jack Potter's in San Antonio."
"Well, who is he? What's he got to do with this?"
"Oh, he's the town policeman. He goes out and fights Scratchy when he starts acting this way."
A nervous, waiting silence was upon them.
The salesman saw that the saloon keeper, without a sound, had taken a gun from a hiding place. Then he saw the man signal to him, so he moved across the room.
"You better come with me behind this table."
"No thanks," said the salesman. "I'd rather be where I can get out the back door." At that, the saloon keeper made a kindly but forceful motion.
The salesman obeyed and found himself seated on a box with his head below the level of the table. The saloon keeper sat comfortably upon a box nearby.
"You see," he whispered, "Scratchy Wilson is a wonder with a gun, a perfect wonder. And when he gets excited, everyone gets out of his path. He's a terror when he's drunk. When he's not drinking, he's all right. Wouldn't hurt anything. Nicest fella in town. But when he's drunk, be careful."
There were periods of stillness.
"I wish Jack Potter were back from San Antonio," said the saloon keeper. "He shot Wilson once, in the leg. He'd come in and take care of this thing."
Soon, they heard from a distance the sound of a shot, followed by three wild screams. The men looked at each other.
"Here he comes," they said.
A man in a red shirt turned a corner and walked into the middle of the main street of Yellow Sky. In each hand, the man held a long, heavy, blue-black gun. Often he screamed, and these cries rang through the seemingly deserted village. The scream sounded sharply over the roofs with a power that seemed to have no relation to the ordinary strength of a man's voice. These fierce cries rang against walls of silence. The man's face flamed in a hot anger born of whiskey. His eyes, rolling but watchful, hunted the still doorways and windows. He walked with the movement of a midnight cat. As the thoughts came to him, he roared threatening information. The long guns hung from his hands like feathers. They were moved with electric speed. The muscles of his neck straightened and sank as passion moved him. The only sounds were his terrible invitations to battle. The calm houses preserved their dignity at the passing of this small thing in the middle of the street. There was no offer of fight, no offer of fight. The man called to the sky. There were no answers. He screamed and shouted and waved his guns here and everywhere. Finally, the man was at the closed door of the saloon. He went to it and, beating upon it with his gun, demanded drink. The door remained closed. He picked up a bit of paper from the street and nailed it to the frame of the door with a knife. Then he turned his back upon the place and walked to the opposite side of the street. Turning quickly and easily, he fired the guns at the bit of paper. He missed it by half an inch. He cursed at himself and went away. Later, he comfortably shot out all the windows of the house of his best friend. Scratchy was playing with this town. It was a toy for him. But still, there was no offer of fight. The name of Jack Potter, his ancient enemy, entered his mind. He decided that it would be a good thing if he went to Potter's house and, by shooting at it, make him come out and fight. He moved in the direction of his desire, singing some sort of war song. When he arrived at it, Potter's house presented the same still front as had the other homes. Taking a good position, the man screamed an invitation to battle. But this house regarded him as a great stone god might have done. It gave no sign. After a little wait, the man screamed more invitations, mixing them with wonderful curses. After a while came the sight of a man working himself into deepest anger over the stillness of a house. He screamed at it. He shot again and again. He paused only for breath or to reload his guns. Potter and his bride walked rapidly. Sometimes they laughed together, quietly and a little foolishly.
"Next corner, dear,"
he said finally. They put forth the efforts of a pair walking against a strong wind. Potter was ready to point the first appearance of the new home. Then, as they turned the corner, they came face to face with the man in the red shirt, who was feverishly loading a large gun. Immediately the man dropped his empty gun to the ground and, like lightning, pulled out another. The second gun was aimed at Potter's chest. There was a silence. Potter couldn't open his mouth. Quickly he loosened his arm from the woman's grasp and dropped the bag to the sand. As for the bride, her face had become the color of an old cloth. She was motionless. The two men faced each other at a distance of 9 feet. Behind the gun, Wilson smiled with a new and quiet cruelty.
"Tried to surprise me," he said. "Tried to surprise me."
His eyes grew more evil. As Potter made a slight movement, the man pushed his gun sharply forward.
"No, don't you do it, Jack Potter. Don't you move a finger toward a gun yet. Don't you move a muscle. The time has come for me to settle with you, and I'm going to do it my own way, slowly, with no interruption. So just listen to what I tell you."
Potter looked at his enemy. "I haven't got a gun with me, Scratchy," he said. "Honest, I haven't." He was stiffening and steadying. But at the back of his mind floated a picture of the beautiful car on the train. He thought of the glory of the wedding, the spirit of his new life.
"You know I fight when I have to fight, Scratchy Wilson. But I haven't got a gun with me. You have to do all the shooting yourself."
His enemy's face turned pale with anger. He stepped forward and whipped his gun back and forth before Potter's chest.
"Don't you tell me you haven't got a gun with you, you dog! Don't you tell me a lie like that! There ain't a man in Texas who ever saw you without a gun! Don't think I'm a kid!"
His eyes burned with anger and his breath came heavily.
"I don't think you're a kid," answered Potter. His feet had not moved an inch backward. "I think you're a complete fool. I tell you I haven't got a gun and I haven't. If you're going to shoot me, you better begin now. You'll never get a chance like this again."
So much enforced reasoning had weakened Wilson's anger. He was calmer.
"If you haven't got a gun, why haven't you got a gun?"
he asked.
"Been to church?"
"I haven't got a gun because I've just come from San Antonio with my wife. I'm married," said Potter. "And if I had thought there'd be a fool like you here when I brought my wife home, I would have had a gun, and don't you forget it."
"Married?"
said Scratchy, not at all understanding.
"Yes, married. I'm married," said Potter clearly.
"Married?"
said Scratchy. Seemingly for the first time, he saw the pale, frightened woman at the other side.
"No!"
he said. He was like a creature allowed a glance at another world. He moved a pace backward, and his arm with the gun dropped to his side.
"Is this the lady?"
he asked.
"Yes, this is the lady," answered Potter.
There was another period of silence.
"Well," said Wilson at last, slowly, "I suppose we won't fight now."
"We won't if you say so, Scratchy. You know, I didn't make the trouble."
Potter lifted the bag.
"Well, I guess we won't fight, Jack," said Wilson.
He was looking at the ground.
"Married."
He was not a student of good manners. It was merely that in the presence of this foreign condition, he was a simple child of the wildlands. He picked up his fallen gun, and he went away. His feet made deep tracks in the heavy sand.
And that is our show for today. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.